sitting alongside our spirit animal, which is a saber-toothed horse. It's the Funk Zone Podcast with your host, Ted Mills.
Why, hello, 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 folks. Welcome to the Funk Zone Podcast. This is episode 56, and I am your host, Ted Mills. Hello. This is the show where I interview artists and creative people and see what makes them tick and what makes them do what they do. Now, first of all, a happy new year to everybody out there listening. A happy 2016. I hope you had a good one. I hope you are planning some fun adventures for the coming year. I'll tell you this, you know how usually it takes a few weeks or so to get out of that habit of writing the old year on things, you know, like checks and such. Not so this year. When it turned 2016, I was ready to go. I just wrote it out. I comprehended it. I knew it was 2016. And no mistake so far. I like sixes. I like the years that have sixes. They usually turn out to be good years. So who knows? Maybe this is a good sign. It's one of our first rainy days here in Santa Barbara, and people are freaking out, man. The road between Carpinteria and Ventura is shut down. Last time I checked, it was washed out, and that didn't take long, did it? Not a lot of rain for that to happen. Well, we haven't seen rain for so long. We're not too sure how to process it, I think. I'm loving it because I had the foresight to fix our gutters a few months ago. A few months ago, climbing up a ladder where I did not find any monks, and it was all very precarious, and there was a lot of dirt in those gutters, and yeah, anyway. Woohoo! I did some house maintenance. That sounds very exciting, but look, the rain came down, and it went down the roof, it went down the gutter, and spilled out on the floor and went away. On the ground, went away down the road. So it worked out instead of just cascading off the roof in a sheet like I think it was. Okay, so now here is how I'm kicking off 2016. Last night, I launched my Patreon campaign, which you can find over at patreon.com/funkzonepodcast. What is this? Patreon. Well, as you know, this podcast is free. It's always been free. It's free to listen to. But on the other hand, currently, I don't get paid to put this together. In fact, I pay out for it to exist. I pay for all the web hosting. I pay an assistant to help with the booking and the logistics, because there's a lot of that going on behind the scenes, and I can't do all that stuff. I take many, many hours out of my week to travel to artist studios, I sit down with them to record these interviews, and then there's hours to put everything together and produce a professional show. So that's time away. That's time away from my other jobs. That's time away from my wife, my long-suffering wife. It's just time away from other things. But it's time well spent, because I think this show is important. I think the show is bringing artists that you may have heard of, may have never heard of, and giving them bigger exposure in this world. And I enjoy doing it. I love talking to people. So, if you are a fan of the show and you'd like to show your appreciation, because I know you've been listening for some of you right since the beginning, Patreon helps you donate to the podcast weekly for as little as $1 a week. I have a video explaining the whole thing. I'm not going to get into all that. You should go over and watch the video. Check out the page. Check out the milestones and the prizes and the goodies and all that kind of stuff. So go over to patreon.com. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. patreon.com/funkzonepodcast. Okay. That is the long spiel for our kickoff, but I'm excited about it, and I hope you like the look of the video. It was fun. If you've ever wondered what I look like doing this podcast, that's what you'll see in the video. I'll be talking to you directly. Woo! Also, the tables were turned the other week, and I was a guest on another podcast. I was on the Joe Strandell Show. If you want to hear me talk about everything from the arts to politics, head over to Joe Strandell, Strandell, joestrandell.com, and find the episode. You can also find him on Facebook under the same thing, Joe Strandell. So check it out. Let me know if you are having trouble finding it, because on certain places it was easy to find. Others, some people said they couldn't. It's 2 hours of me talking on stuff. Woo! Boy, you'll feel like you'll know me by the end of it. Yet I'm still a mystery and an enigma. Okay, on to this week's episode. So this week, I sit down with an hour-long chat with artist, musician, and cartoonist Neil Crosby. Back when I was a lad, Neil Crosby had an alternative comic in one of the weekly papers here in Santa Barbara. And my mom used to send me clippings when I was living in the UK. And he was one of them, along with Life in Hell. Who would have seen that one had took off? Anyway, Neil Crosby's strips were like these odd things that he had a coyote character and jokes, but they weren't jokes. They seemed like Zen koans. They didn't make sense to me back then, and I thought I was missing things. So, fast forward many years, and then here I am. I began to run into Neil's work. It's hanging in places like the Blue Agave restaurant, where he was actually on the menus, too. And these paintings, these large paintings, they felt like the parts of his comic had been exploded onto the canvas. There was text, there's characters, there's other things, abstract shapes. It's like a Zen cowboy met up with Paul Klee and jammed out together. I think that's the way I would describe it. He is represented by several national and international galleries, but if you're in Santa Barbara on a Sunday, you can find him at the Cabrillo Boulevard Arts and Crafts Walk, which is where I first met him in person, and I started to set up this interview. Now, Crosby is also in a band called Zen Horse Repair, along with musician and his friend Tom Lackner. And he does a whole bunch of other things, too. We talk about all sorts of things in this interview, and we laugh a lot through this. At the moment, you can find him on the web at Facebook, facebook.com/Neil Crosby, with a little period between Neil and Crosby, so NEAL.CROSBIE, Neil Crosby, there you go. For myself, you can find me, as usual, at tedmills.com for my writing, funkzonepodcast.com so you can sign up and you can check out Neil's art for this episode and all that business, and you should subscribe to our email list. You can also find us on iTunes and on Stitcher. I'm also on Twitter at Ted Mills, and hey, that Patreon page once more is patreon.com/funkzonepodcast. Whew. Okay, let's get started with our interview, recorded on October 16th, 2015. Remember, that was last year. And now, ready, finally, for your listening pleasure, here we go. Neil Crosby, welcome to the Funk Zone Podcast.
Thanks, Ted. Nice to be here.
Thank you.
I really like your place.
Yeah, no, it's full of paintings. Actually, we are sitting in your studio.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
In Mission Canyon. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful overcast autumn day, even though it's pretty humid.
Yeah, it feels like autumn, almost.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah.
How long have you been in this house?
Since 11 o'clock. 14 years. It's a self-imposed house arrest.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Where's your bracelet?
I sold it to my wife.
Do you know
the dog? Emerson, the dog. Emerson.
Oh, there's, yeah. You're here with Emerson, the dog.
Yeah, just, yeah. In case you hear any extra nice sound, like panting.
Yeah,
not Kim.
No, it's Emerson. Yeah. Is Emerson named after the
Emerson writer, was named after the poet, philosopher, Ralph Waldo Emerson. Kim was going to name him Thoreau.
Yeah.
And one of her friends said, "You mean like Thoreau the ball?" And so we had to.
So that went out.
Yeah, that went out. Yeah.
Do you know the history of this house? Who it was built by?
Yeah, no, I don't know who built it, but it was built in 1895.
Really?
Yeah, the original records say 1895. And a lot of these rooms, such as the studio here, are add-ons to the original. Mm. But the living room and kitchen we just saw out there, and There's probably no, not probably, they would have had an outhouse, mm-hmm. not a bathroom, and hopefully, and yeah, yeah. And you see, it's really close to the road out there, Puesta del Sol.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Imagine that wasn't a two-lane road. It was a one-lane road in the middle of the road. And it's got in the fireplace, which is a really good fireplace, like old fireplaces. Mm-hmm. You know, they were made to broadcast heat.
Yeah.
It's got a swinging iron arm to hold pots.
And yeah. Oh,
so,
really?
So I made a Bufala Borgognone on it one Christmas.
And, you did?
Yeah,
well, you
a cast did. Iron pot. Yeah, it's a real fireplace.
Nice.
And And what's great about this house is it's, you know, like 5 minutes from downtown, but it feels like living in the country almost. The big oak, it's an old oak forest.
Yeah.
And that's right. I just love the area. It's a great area.
It's my memories of the early memories are going to the Natural History Museum, which are only a couple of doors away from, and how that always seemed like a magical place.
Yeah.
Mostly because it is in the middle of kind of forest.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's not downtown. It's not the city.
Yeah, yeah. It's very nice. Behind the mission. You can see why the conquistadors and the missionaries put the mission here where it is.
Yeah.
How it overlooks the whole area.
Overlooks the whole
access
area.
Access to water and close to the mountains, but overlooking the ocean. And
cooler.
There's Emerson. There's Emerson.
See, there you go. Now we're hearing.
You going to go out? You want to go outside?
Emerson is.
You can get by. He just likes a little special. Huh?
He's a bit clunky. He's a bit clunky. Is that his...
He just turned 10.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's having some sort of back leg nerve action, it looks like, just starting to...
Aw.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it goes.
Yeah.
So it goes.
Yeah.
Right. So the last time we talked, actually, well, the first time and the last time we talked, right. Previous to this, was when I was interviewing you for a story on the artist tour. Pretty much every Sunday, you can be found down on Cabrillo Boulevard.
Yeah.
That's right, huh? Well, for people who are listening to this, and they may be coming in, that's where they can find you.
They may be coming in where?
From who knows where. Oh, just comes out of Santa Barbara.
Well, like, in that case, yes, I am.
Yes, you are. Not from the authorities.
Yeah, no, the authorities do not know where to find me, right?
But you do well there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a real surprise. When the recession hit, do you want to hear about this?
Yeah,
okay.
Of course I want
why
to hear
I'm
about
there,
it.
How I
yeah,
get there.
Yeah, how'd you get there?
Yeah, I've only sold in galleries my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And good galleries, as in it was SF MoMA Artist Gallery, 15 years. The Lim Gallery in San Francisco, 13 years. I was in the Barry Gordon Gallery in Santa Monica, 13 years. Showed in Matt Ingersoll's Art Resources on Haley Street, about 15 shows over the years.
Yeah. Is that still there?
He's still there, but he's not doing shows anymore.
Okay, that's why I haven't heard about it.
He does framing and special... projects, but he stopped doing shows, lots of shows with Barry Spax around town and mm-hmm. collaborations and then publishing in magazines and I'm in a really good gallery called the Janos Gallery in Paris, France.
Nice.
Yeah, and I was in Tricycle Magazine, the Buddhist Quarterly, for 20 years. Mm. When the recession hit, all of a sudden the checks stopped coming in, and not that they were ever regular or much, but it was enough for me to call myself an artist and live on it. This is the canary in the coal mine thing. That the artists, the first thing people stop buying is art.
Yeah.
When the recession or something like that happens, when the economy tanks.
Yeah.
And I was about to lose this house, which I love. I really love this house. Not that I own it, the bank owns it, but a lot of years living here and putting into it. And my wife and my best friend, Tom Lackner, said, my wife is Kim Cornell, by the way, said, well, why don't you try the beach show? And without being pejorative at all, I didn't think I'd fit in down there because it's, you know, you would think visitors want more plain air stuff from the artists.
It's arts and crafts.
It's arts and crafts,
and plain air heavy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great stuff, but I'm not a plain air painter. And in the art section, that's basically photography and plain air is what I thought most people, and I just still think most people are expecting to find and see.
Mm.
Having said that, so I went down there and tried it out of desperation.
Mm-hmm.
And about 1 out of 100 passersby don't hate my work. And that's all I need.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that one tends to really like my work. And so I've got lots of encouragement right away in terms of I think I can make my living doing this. Now, making art and selling art have nothing whatsoever to do with each other.
Yeah.
And I never thought I could nor would sell my own work, that I would like it, nor could I do it. And I'm actually enjoying it. It's a challenge, and I'm loving meeting the people who are buying my work. I've sold thousands of pieces I go for quantity over quality. I've never met the people who bought it.
Just like, turn them out.
The occasional person at an opening, and kind of thing.
Yeah.
But now I'm meeting every single person who buys my work, and there's a lot of return. A lot of people are coming back and return business, and a real sense of evolving relationships and friendships with people who like my work.
Yeah.
Now, I've got a new set of visitors every week, so I add that up, and it's accelerating, plus a lot of locals.
Exponential.
Yeah, hopefully.
Well, when I was sitting there, I noticed that people, whether or not they buy anything, your work prompts questions.
Yes.
Because people want to engage you, and you're there, so you can't escape from it.
Unfortunately.
Right?
Yeah.
Because your paintings, your drawings, they are there's the very ideographic, but also a lot of text hidden in it, and there's little surprises, and there's a lot of levels. So it, I think, appeals to people's puzzle qualities, I guess, that they want to solve something. There must be a mystery there. They're thinking, this is my idea. And I don't know if that was borne out by your conversations with people, but I imagine.
You heard some?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Like, what does this mean?
Yeah.
How does this connect to this?
Yeah.
Yeah, is that going through your mind when you're making things? Like, I'm gonna throw them off the scent.
The trajectory isn't usually towards the eventual viewer. It's more towards myself. And here's the end comment about that is that if the next day I come back to the studio and I look at a piece and I really understand it,
mm-hmm.
this sounds highfalutin, but I will very very regularly tear it up because I feel like it's finished.
Yeah,
and. And what I don't know what you might have heard me say to these people, but what's generally happening is there's a sense of riddle. There's a sense of what's going on here.
Yeah.
And if they know a little bit about Zen, I've mentioned the Zen koan,
mm-hmm.
which is what's the sound of one hand clapping? What's your mother's face before? What's your face before your mother was born?
Yeah.
These kind of things that don't have an answer, but they stop the traditional conceptual patterns of mind thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that in art, peace should take you where you've never gone before. Like Star Trek, basically. It's like, well, if I say I'm going to meet you tomorrow at the pier at 12 o'clock, we have to understand each other. But a piece of art can hopefully transport you and take you somewhere where you haven't been. And hopefully it's enjoyable, elucidating, wonderful, surprising place.
Yeah.
But to explain this to a passerby who's just at the beach and wasn't looking for this, it becomes a very abstract and I always go home with a sore throat because how much do they want to know? Some people are just saying, what's this,
Yeah.
I mean, can you elaborate on can you expand the question? Because I'm not sure, do they mean what kind of art is? Sometimes they mean, what do you call this? And sometimes they want to know an understanding, want an answer. And so it becomes very abstract, very challenging, very multi-layered. And I'm not just saying that some, like for instance, I could say, well, it's an uneducated person, if you'll excuse the term, might say, what's this? And I have to imagine what they mean by that.
Yeah.
What is this character who is in every single piece that I do, this coyote man? Or what kind of art is this? Mm. But to give an example of this, it's not just about education or something. I've had almost fights with engineers. Engineers really, really have a problem getting into my work. Engineers are really bad people. Do you know that?
Do they come up to you and say, "I, sir, am an engineer"?
No, but when I'm really not agreeing with someone, it's coming close to fisticuffs. I find, "What do you do for a living?" "I'm an engineer."
Oh, really? You're right.
I knew it. Happens all the time. And accountants also.
Really?
Yeah.
So you will not find these hanging in an accountant's office.
I might, but they're usually the husbands of someone who buys it.
Oh, okay.
And they try and talk me down in a mighty way. but I had an engineer here 2 years ago at the art walk, art tour walk.
Yeah.
And seriously, he's basically saying, so to get back to your question, he's saying, so what is going on here? I said, well, this guy is basically telling you, this one says, the less you try to think about this, the more meaning you'll see in it, especially if you're in a hurry. He goes, what do you mean this guy is saying that? I said, well, see this guy right here? He goes, no. I said, well, this abstract thing here is my coyote man. He goes, oh my God. And he goes, and then he looked at me really angrily and he said, so what do you mean he's saying it? I said, well, he is saying it. And he goes, no, you said it. I said, okay, I put it on the paper, but it's, and it got really, really intense. And he had four friends who came in the room to see if everything was okay.
Yeah.
He ended up buying three. But there was this arc of getting from here to some sense of understanding. And like I say, it's for different people on different levels. He's an engineer. Yeah. But engineers tend to be that way with me, which is hilarious, because I always now ask right away, are you an engineer when it gets...
Yeah.
Or an accountant.
So we don't get heated here.
Firemen never even get into my work. They just kind of nod in a very sage-like, you know, like, that's nice, I'm going to keep going.
Yeah. How does this engineer read the comic pages in the paper? He must get all annoyed.
Maybe it's like me looking at a crossword puzzle, you know?
Maybe
a challenge going into a different world.
Ooh. I think people get mad, and I've talked about this with a lot of abstract painters, that people get mad because they think they're being tricked.
Yeah. I have that all the time. So look at this. I mean, you don't have to like it, Ted, but you have to look at it because it's sitting right...
This is a large canvas, by the way. What's the size of this?
8x6.
It's 8x6. We're sitting in front of this canvas for people who are listening.
Yeah, and a lot of my canvases are busy in a minimal way, like the one on your left, which is called Not Doing. It's also called Wind Biscuit because I couldn't decide on...
Wind Biscuit.
Wind Biscuit. Okay. But that was sort of minimal. It's kinetic. It's moving around. It doesn't resolve, so I really like it. It's spacious. But this one's really busy. And it's called When the Wind Blows, the Waterfall Wavers... But only more or less.
Yeah.
Actually, that should be the end of the interview, don't you think? I mean, doesn't that explain
everything? We'll repeat it one more time.
This is the end of the interview, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
And dogs.
The title is on the canvas.
Yeah, the title's on the canvas. And that's because my wife, Kim, who's an architect, like an engineer, came home one day and said, Kim, look, I think I finished this painting finally. And it's in the middle of our house, my studio, for 3 months. And it's 8x6. And she goes... feet, ladies and gentlemen. And she said, well, do you think you can, you know, kind of draw it together a little bit? It's all over the place, which it is, by the way. And so my response was the next day to add these words to it. Yeah. When the wind blows the waterfall, when the wind blows, I wrote it strangely, when the wind blows the waterfall wavers, but only more or less. And they see. Now, I did have these other words, and thus I say the Mahunga Valley. And Ted, you already asked me, where's that?
Yeah, it is nowhere.
And you can't see behind that paper, my rack over there, it says bear hiding behind piece of toast. Tom Lackner actually titled that part of the painting.
Oh, bear hiding behind piece of toast.
He's my musical partner.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so if someone looks at this painting, by the way, I don't expect most people to like it. I'm not even sure if I like it, but I know that it interests me. I don't get tired of it. It's a challenge. It is a puzzle. It's busy. I would claim that it would look about 100% better on a big wall in a bank, you know, big white wall with a spot on it, with a marble floor. It's in a very busy small studio, but it's very subjective to imagine anybody should or would like something. So I have to at least challenge myself, and that gets back to your original question, I think.
Well, your works also, because they have so many elements, are designed for repeat viewing. Which is what I like about them. Yeah. So if something like this was in my house, well, if it was in my house, I wouldn't be able to get out the door because it's so huge. But let's just say I had a bigger house. This is something that you could get something different out of every morning.
So I've had it for 3 months, and it's doing that for me. That's a compliment to me. That's enough. You don't have to say anymore. End of interview.
Click.
But here's an example. Can I give you a much more minimal example? You can describe this while I get it.
Okay. He's standing up and getting... Okay, this is this... what material?
This is an oil crayon. That's on Strathmore Pear. Okay. It's the size of a poster. It's 18 by 23.
It's very blue.
It's very blue. It's a cobalt blue. And the reason why I'm comparing it to that one is because it's very minimal. By the way, I know a picture's worth 1,000 words. So here come the words.
Okay.
So it's my Coyote Man guy, which nobody can understand why he looks like that, and especially me. We'll talk about the fact that I can't draw later on. I spent my whole life making a career of not drawing.
We'll get into that later.
But it's called Be Calm. So up on top it says Be Calm, and there's a line under it, and that's written in red. And below that, in smaller letters, it says, in black letters, it says See Below. And then you've got the Coyote guy just standing there, which is all he's ever doing because I can't draw. But there's an arrow pointing at him, and it says Being Calm.
Mm. And then there's some text underneath. There's some little scratched really text
that says, therefore, the old saying, the moon.
Ah.
That's just throw it off that one. Okay, so that's why I chose this. I forgot about that. So compared to the big painting, what's going on? This is very close to doing something I don't like to do, and that is have it work on a joke level. Like what are the best cartoons and jokes in the world. They're in the New Yorker. Yeah. And those are really good. I mean, I've subscribed for 40 years. It's on my, they're on my refrigerator. But after about 3 weeks, you move on to a new one. And art can't do that. It has to be more abstract. It has to be more open. It can't be, it would just be cute.
Yeah.
So it can't be like a Hallmark card or a New Yorker on the other extreme.
Yeah.
But this is somewhere, I think, just to compare my own work to my own work, compared to the painting, it's really minimal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that its tension or its resonance occurs in the just strangeness of him sitting there not doing anything. And I get to call it being calm, which is very arbitrary. It's sort of random. I could have called it, you know, walking down the street.
Yeah. Having a thing.
And that's the hard part. You have to decide, okay, when does it become mysterious?
Yeah.
Or transcendent?
And when can you leave it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it T.S. Eliot who said, you don't finish a poem, you abandon it? You find it. Okay, here's...
Okay. Let's go back to the mic.
Okay.
What was that T.S. Eliot quote that you said earlier?
T.S. Eliot said, you never finish a poem, you abandon it?
Yeah.
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 And it's true of just... I'm sure it's true of building a car or anything. You know, this one's called
Well, hopefully not, like GM does.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
This'll do.
It is fine. We'll finish the car.
Okay.
So here's one.
Here's another one. Now, this is not. This is not blue. This is mostly the paper.
Yes, mostly the paper, the raw paper, and it's got well crayon and colored pencils and ink on it. But I'm picking it up also randomly because it was behind the other one. But as I put the other one back, I noticed that this one's busy like the painting, even though it's smaller. But it's called the Wandering Around Sutra. And there's another character besides Troutman. There's his girlfriend who's called. Besides Coyote Man, did I say that?
Yeah, Coyote Man, yeah.
And that's Trout Girl.
And
she's standing in a canoe and she's saying, Wandering Around. Okay, so it's called the Wandering Around Sutra. And she's saying, Wandering Around reminds me of wandering around. And he's saying, Just think, if you were a tree, you'd be home by now. And then there's a little box at the bottom that says, No coyotes were harmed in the formulation of this masterwork.
Mm. What's the circle in the bottom, which looks like you left your cup there?
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
That is exactly where I left my teacup.
Oh, it is?
Is that obvious? I want to do it a lot more. Isn't that cool?
But what is funny is that you kind of signed it.
Yeah, I signed it.
It looks like...
Because it became the best part of the whole... I mean, so there you go.
It's like Japanese.
The happy mistake, right?
Yeah.
The happy mistake. That's like a Zen circle.
Yeah, it's like a Zen circle.
Never intended, yeah.
Bigger thing.
So my big influences, besides what I'm trying to tell you about how I use language and make visual decisions are Zen Buddhism and traditional Native American culture, myth stories, culture. I've always just loved the two, so I unabashedly just combine them in terms of influences.
Mm.
I don't think it looks Zen-ish, and I don't think it looks Native American, although you see definite...
There's bits.
Bits of it, yeah, definitely. I mean, I hope you do.
But it's not...
Yeah.
It's not
a lot of the stuff looks Native American, just... Almost accidentally because of how I use color, I think.
There's a little bit of kind of, I don't want to say primitive, but...
you can say primitive.
Well, almost like cave.
Yeah, it's very primitive.
And we're only a couple of miles away from the Chumash cave, the painted cave.
No, so. Very, very... In fact, look at this. This is funny you say that. Right? I got to leave the mic for a second.
Okay, leave the mic.
He's pointing at...
He's leaving the mic.
This is... Definitely taken from that Chumash thing. About 2 years ago, I started using this thing.
Uh-huh.
Here it is here. That's from that Chumash painted cave painting. This looks like a cave wall almost.
Yeah, I don't even know how to describe that on the mic. So.
That's impossible. We won't even try.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the mic.
Yeah. No, my stuff is intentionally primitive, plus combined with the fact that, as I said, I have no drawing talent. And, by the way, I say this with... I know it's funny. How do you... What have you done your whole life? Art, but you can't draw? No, I definitely can't draw. I studied art my whole life. I got 3 scholarships to go to college. I knew I was going to be an artist. I've always known that, and I have no talent. I've never met anybody who doesn't have more talent than me. And ladies and gentlemen...
Less talent than me.
I've never met anybody who has less talent.
Yeah.
Yeah, less talent.
Yeah, yeah.
And the message here, ladies and gentlemen, and Ted, is that... If I can do this, you can do anything you want to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds funny. It's really true. I do it by perspicacity. I want to tell this story. I knew I wanted to do it. I decided it can't. You and I were talking before we turned on the mics about art school teachers, and I knew that I wanted. Oh, yeah. I knew I wanted to do this, and teachers tuned in the fact that I wasn't going to be doing plein air painting or portraiture or anything. You know, even though I studied composition and color theory and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. I had this fly buzzing around.
You sure do.
Yeah.
One of the mics picking it up.
Yeah, that would be cool if the.
I'm glad you're here because I hear my decoys always. This fly has been living here for years, this particular fly.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it lives around my ears when I'm really trying to concentrate.
Yeah, he's dive bomb. He's dive bomb. Yeah,
he's over there now.
Where'd you grow up?
I didn't.
You didn't?
I'm getting ready.
Yeah, I see. No. Okay.
I was born in the Haight in San Francisco in 1951.
Really?
Yeah.
Right on the Haight?
In the Haight-Ashbury, yeah.
So your parents were living...
I was born across from the Cole Street Hardware. I was born by the tree.
Really?
Yeah.
Your parents were living on the Haight?
Yep, yep.
But in 59, it wasn't.
51.
50, sorry.
Yeah. It was still, it wasn't hippie stuff.
Yeah,
it was still beatniks.
It was beatniks.
It was beatniks already, yeah.
Were your parents beatniks?
No, my uncle was.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
What kind?
My parents beat me. Oh. Anyway, yeah. What kind of beatnik?
Yeah, yeah.
Tall. He's tall.
Yeah. Was he like kind of was he the stereotypical beatnik?
That's yeah, he really was. If you saw, he's still alive and you saw him now, you go, did you used to be a beatnik? Are you still? He's still a beatnik.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, he turned me on to Kenneth Rexroth, whom I got to meet later on in Santa Barbara here.
Mm-hmm. He lived here, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. And he turned me on to the beat poetry when I was really young. That stuff was all happening there. It sounds like a dream.
Yeah.
But San Francisco was a Renaissance city. I had great teachers, and they knew that somehow I was going to go. Basically, I studied with Ralph Goings for 2 years, and this is in Sacramento when I went to went to high school in Sacramento. And Ralph Goings, when he retired the year I graduated high school, I said, "What are you going to do?" And he said, "I'm moving to New York to drink beer and paint." And he became the most famous photorealist painter in the history of photorealist painting.
Yeah,
he really did it. And he said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "I don't know, but I know I'm not very good at this." He goes, "No, you're terrible." And I said, he said, "So what do you want to do?" I said, "Well, I'm more interested in comics and writing, and somehow I don't mean like comic books, but what we know now as
sequential art."
What do you call novel art when they do
graphic novel?
Graphic novels.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't exist yet, but I was moving towards. I knew I wanted to write.
Yeah.
But I knew I wanted to draw, and he said, "Yeah, well, you sure can't draw." I said, "I know, and I can't write either." But, but he said, "Here's my advice," and this is going to sound really strange, but it's getting back to the word you said, primitive. He said, "Take the pen out of your right hand and the brush, and put it in your left hand because I'm right-handed."
Mm.
And everything you see here is done with my left hand.
Really?
My whole life, yeah. And
everything?
I'm right-handed, yeah.
And left, really?
Yeah, everything. And even when I write,
yeah,
I use my left hand because I think it's using... I say think because they're starting to disprove this, apparently.
Yeah.
That I think it uses the other hemisphere of the brain, the more creative, looser, feminine, you know, crazy.
Is that why your writing has kind of a blocky way? Because your O's are square.
Yeah.
Instead of round.
Yeah.
That suggests that that's
It's trying to have a certain amount of control. I mean, it's getting weird now because after all these years, I'm trying to make it look like I'm not using my left hand because I don't want it to look intentionally like I'm trying to be childlike or primitive.
Mm-hmm.
But two of my favorite artists are Cy Twombly and Paul Klee. And I was really inspired, like, you know, try and scribble like Cy Twombly. I challenge anybody to do that.
Yeah.
And you can't. I found out he did a lot of his original stuff in the dark just to have that total give up the sense of control about making decisions and stuff.
Or blindfolded, that'd be
right. Blindfolded, yeah. Try it. But still, no people do the same thing. It doesn't come out the same as how he did it.
Yeah.
And
well, he has that again, yeah, primitive. He has way it looks like, what is this guy about?
Yeah.
He looks like he's crazy
if you
looked at his stuff.
Yeah.
I saw in Philly. In Philly Art Museum because they have that huge, the ones he did about Achilles.
Yeah,
those large ones. They had a whole gallery full of his stuff.
Yeah, I wish we were filming this because I'd show that. I've a bunch of his books here.
But
the stuff looks crazy, but it's also transcendent, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There's something extremely liberating about it, about just giving up all control, which you can't, by the way. You're still deciding to use a canvas, deciding to use crayons or whatever you're using.
Mm.
You can't really give it up. So there's this inherent tension, friction, and gravitas in the act, because you're still saying you're an artist and you put it for sale. So it has to have some sense of, it has to deliver.
Yeah. There's something about the line that can, when you draw a line, as simple as a line is, it contains your DNA.
Exactly.
And then you, depending on how you feel about yourself, some artists want to kind of get away from that. Like they see too much of themselves in it, mm-hmm. And too much of their mistakes.
Yeah.
So if you can kind of untrain yourself, I guess it's where Picasso was going near the end. It's just trying to get further and further away from his look.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. At the very end of his life, a lot of people, contemporaries, thought he was losing it.
Yeah.
And now to recognize he's one of the first abstract expressionists. He's still on the wave of the next movement. He's in exactly what you're saying. He's trying to get more wild, more like what became the German wild painters, like Georg Baselitz. And those guys.
I want to go back to your childhood because I always found it fascinating. Were you like a free range child? Like you were just, as they call them these days, i.e., yeah.
Everybody.
Are you just like hanging out on the hay, walking up and down? Your parents are cool.
Where'd you grow up?
Here,
Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying.
But didn't
memories
you get to go outside and play in those days?
I could not because we lived on Bel Air Knolls, like on Portobello Avenue. Yeah. So it was a hill. So there was no kids around, really. There was a girl across the street 3 years younger, but I don't play with a girl. I wanted to play kids my own age. Yeah. But that meant either my parents or someone else's parents had to drive so-and-so to somebody's house. It was always very constrained. Mm-hmm. Not in the way it is now, but it was just logistically. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't have that. I spent a lot of time by myself, being an only child. But I, I'd go get lost in the in our backyard, which was large, sort of thing. Not like now. They want to know where everybody...
If
parents could put, trackers in their kids like they do their pets, they would.
Yeah. Why don't they?
I think there's pesky laws. Maybe in the way for that. I don't know.
I just realized it. But he has one. Our dog.
Yeah.
Why don't people's kids disappear and they don't know where they are? That's strange.
Yeah. That's freedom.
Yeah.
Huh. Our precious freedom.
But yeah, we all
so
got
you
to
were
be
like
free.
That.
Yeah, and it was wild. It was a very mixed neighborhood back then in the 50s. And
Are you only child?
No, I'm oldest of four.
So were you the head of your sibling group going out?
No, we're all kind of on our own, went in different directions. Definitely.
What's the furthest from your home at the hate that you went as a kid?
I accidentally ended up in Germany.
You hopped the plane?
Yeah, rolled into the fuselage. No. The farthest I went. Well, we rode bikes and skateboards everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, we were all over the
place. That's what I mean. Yeah. Like, so how far?
Golden Gate Park is 3 blocks away,
Yeah.
And, but it was a very different time, I mean, kids went out and played.
Yeah.
Amazing. I know. Can I get arrested for... I'm not advertising that people should... Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Kids should be able to go out and play.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really, I think it's...
The percentage possibility of anything terrible happening is, I would think, the same percentage possibility of something terrible happened to you as an adult or anything.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're worried about getting hit by a car, you're just as liable to get hit by a car when you're 35 or 55 or so.
And to expand upon that, if we're worried about getting hit by a terrorist, what in the world are we out doing with being around cars? I mean, because most people don't get taken by terrorists.
You'll probably get hit by a car.
Like 6,000 to 8,000 Americans die in traffic accidents. And we're worried about terrorism?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's easier.
Yeah,
it's
easier.
Yeah. It's easier.
And
there's
also big business.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, what did your parents do? What was
my parents? My mom was a housewife, and we were really lucky. She used to take us to the library every Wednesday, and we get to get like 6 books each. We were all readers.
Ooh, 6 books.
Yeah, we didn't watch a lot of TNV back then.
Do you have one in the house?
Yeah, but it's funny. I didn't watch TV for about 45 years, and Kim, my wife, is teaching me how to watch it and how to work it, and I still can't turn one on or off. I can turn her on if I really, really... Never mind.
Hey!
Okay, so...
There you go.
But the other night we were watching... we were watching the Remembrance of Robin Williams.
Oh, yeah.
And and one of my idols from when I was a kid, when we did watch TNV, for some reason we saw Jonathan Winters a lot back then in the 50s. And he's one of my favorites. I remember my dad was a really macho guy, mm-hmm. businessman, and he would cry watching Jonathan, just cry with tears of laughter, and love. And the first piece of art I ever sold in my life was to Jonathan Winters.
Oh, really?
Here in Santa Barbara.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. So and that. So then I knew I was going to make it.
You mean blessed by your, yeah, right. by your childhood yeah, hero.
Yeah. I just couldn't believe that I was seeing him, much less he was buying a piece of my art.
Was he nice to you?
He was really nice.
Yeah.
A real, yeah, just, yeah, it was a great moment. Yeah. He really eased me into being a professional.
You're, when you talk about your Coyote Man, you mentioned that he's been around since 9.
Yeah.
So you're 9 o'clock. So is there an origin story
not
to,
9 o'clock.
To that? Not 9 o'clock. Not 9 o'clock. No. Yeah. Not 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Did you say that?
No.
Oh, I thought you said not 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Not oh, 9 I said. Wait, no, wait, are you?
Yeah. Wait, who's interviewing? Okay.
Yeah.
Is there an origin story?
Yeah. The origin story is that I fell out of a tree in Golden Gate Park.
Yeah.
And I couldn't talk for 3 years. And
really?
Yeah.
At 9?
At 9, yeah. And
what like nerve damage or?
Actually, someone asked me recently, well, what did the doctors say? My parents they were so overjoyed that we didn't go to a doctor because it was so great that I wasn't talking. And so I But yeah, I started
thank
doing
goodness.
Yeah. So I started doing these drawings. I'm saying 3 years. It might have been 2 years and 9 months. It was somewhere close to 3 years.
Yeah. Wait, how did that affect school?
The teachers were glad, too. I could still hear. I was an incredibly bright child. I could light up a room with the lights off.
Were you writing on pads and holding up your answers?
Yeah, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
I got by.
I mean, I had really, you know... Teachers were different. I mean, we had really good teachers back then and in San Francisco. I shouldn't say teachers are different. The school systems were different. And we had an incredible educational system in San Francisco.
You had arts funding.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
And PE and music and the whole works. And so teachers were, I think, quite good. I'm sure they still are, but they don't do it anymore. But they're encouraged to hey, you know, you want to do music? Well, there's a music program. You know, you want to play soccer? There's a music program.
Yeah.
And you're
good.
But
you're good at soccer. Yeah. I encourage you to get into the music department.
In the sixth grade.
Yeah.
For instance, there's a teacher who was teaching us ceramics. Can you imagine that happening now?
No.
And this teacher somehow clued in that he had some students in the school who were really good at ceramics, like. 3 or 4 or 5, maybe 6 of us. I'm not sure, but a small group, very small group. Mm. And actually took us to Berkeley one day, to the Berkeley campus. Now imagine, it was a field trip, just one a teacher doing that. And we were so turned on by what we saw, not just the ceramics shop studio and the teachers there.
But the campus.
We're just riding through Berkeley. What's that? That's a man. But it's got long hair and a beard.
your first hippie sighting.
Yeah. So things are already starting to happen. So teachers, there's a whole lot of just really wild, free-ranging, back to your word, just influence in the schools there. Teachers were really good at you know, tailoring things for kids back then. I'm sure they still are, but it's on a level that I don't understand anymore because it's more about testing and teaching for testing.
It's just all the testing.
It's a different thing.
I had to ask about the not talking. Was this something you wanted to talk?
We don't know. No, I love talking.
You couldn't?
I just fell on my... It's probably just a concussive thing.
And we were just like, I want to...
No, I just kind of...
You just went,
I'm
talking now.
Yeah, it was kind of...
That's it?
Yeah.
So when did you start talking? We're skipping over your...
It was at breakfast.
Yeah?
I said, I want my Weiss Pispies. My dad said, they're Rice Krispies, you idiot. And I just, pat, pat, Patsy, he talked. and I was back. Okay. But I can make, I can make the sounds. But I was really happy. I thought it was pretty cool. And by the way, I walked around with a cane. At that, I decided to start using a cane at that point for about 3 years.
What, for effect?
Effect. I thought it would give me more character. So I was a pretty weird kid.
Did you have a monocle?
No, but I wanted one.
Okay.
What kid didn't?
quite a lot, probably. Yeah, right. Okay, let's get backwards. We skipped over the origin story. So you couldn't talk. Coyote Man comes where?
We used to go fishing with my Italian great-grandfather up in Mount Lassen. And there I met an old guy who was a Native American, Paiute Indian, as I recall. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure about that. And he started telling me the myth stories of his tribe and all that, and about coyotes and bears and birds and clouds and all that. Mm-hmm. And I just, I wanted to be him. I just wanted to be him.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a total Irish name. His name was Bill McGreal, and he was 100% Paiute Indian.
Hmm.
And now you might consider there was some, like, almost like a mentoring kind of thing, soft mm-hmm. mentoring, although I'm sure he had no, I would imagine he wouldn't know what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd catch our whole limit of trout before breakfast, and we'd eat them all cooked in bacon, cast iron mm-hmm. pan, you know, and we'd all go off in different ways. And even though I loved my great-grandfather, my Italian great-grandfather, and my dad and my brother were there, and I would go off with him and just be with him. And
this is after. This is when you stopped talking.
Yeah, yeah.
So you had the sage-like quality.
I was quiet. And I could listen. Yeah. I'm a pantheist. I've always worshipped nature. I always think everybody does, or most people, but it's turning out to be probably not exactly true. But he did tune into me. He knew that I just loved being quiet and being out there. And he didn't talk very much. And mostly mm-hmm. talked in these, but just telling me little stories. And anyway, to make a long mm-hmm. story short, after I didn't see him anymore, I really, really missed him. And I never ever saw him again after mm-hmm. one summer. And I started doing these. And when I look at them, this makes total sense. What I'm doing now, I can see how it comes from there, even though I'm highly oversimplifying the whole arc of getting from there to here.
Because mm-hmm.
for a long time, I wanted to be a writer. Mm-hmm. I was writing. In high school, I wrote one short story. It won the California Librarian's Journal First Place Award. Ooh. I've never written another short story. Mm-hmm. I got a scholarship from it.
Did you just say, I'm done?
Yeah, I'm done. But I really wanted to write poetry, so I was writing poetry. I wanted to be I was in a really, really good band for 4 years in Sacramento and in college and writing songs and playing music.
When did you leave San Francisco?
My dad was transferred to Sacramento when I was a freshman in high school.
Oh.
So imagine going from San Francisco in 1966 to Sacramento.
Did that upset you?
Yeah, it was really upsetting. I almost didn't talk again. Yeah, it was really upsetting. But Sacramento turned out to be really good for me in a lot of ways. And without getting into that too much, I had really good teachers there. And one was named John Kaneko. And he was an art teacher. And Ralph Goings, whom I mentioned. Mm-hmm. And then I had a great writing teacher named Jim Pelletier. So I always want to acknowledge those three guys. And so I was writing and doing the art. Mm-hmm. And it was almost schizophrenic for a long time. I mean, for years, because it was different hats, and I'd go back and forth. But when I was doing for something for myself, it would be like this. Mm-hmm. And very, very gradually, I started merging all three. And now, whether I'm writing a song or doing one of these or just doing the painting part of the painting, it's no longer separate. It's just part of the whole gestalt.
When did so you left San Francisco? All the hippies swarmed in.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, 66 is, they're already sort of at their height, I would think, right?
You'd say so. To me, it seemed much more like 68, but yeah, it was 68? Definitely starting in 66.
Yeah.
For instance, Jimi Hendrix came out in 68 with Are You Experienced?
Mm.
And to me, that would be like, pow, that's the middle of it for as far as I'm concerned. But I was younger. I was only 16. And
so you 68. Saw it. Then you're taken away. You saw it happening from a distance.
Yeah.
So what kind of teenager did you turn into?
Well, first of all, we went down to Berkeley and or San Francisco, and specifically to Haight almost every weekend.
You went back?
Yeah. It's like going from here to Santa Monica.
Yeah.
In terms of distance.
And why so did we you go every weekend?
You just wanted to be there.
Oh, okay.
You just wanted to be there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so with older friends who could drive, that kind of thing. And just hanging out in coffee houses and going to the park and People's Park in Berkeley, Golden Gate Park. And just, it was just everywhere. You know, you hear Big Brother and Holding Company. They're just playing. That's them playing over there. Mm-hmm. Janis Joplin and Country Joe and the Fish and all these, you know, great. So I saw Grateful Dead about 35 times.
Oh.
You know, and it was just there.
Yeah.
But by the way, they were all coming to Sacramento too.
Yeah.
And in Sacramento, we had it's a very huge space, and it was just expanding. There's a lot of nature. There's the rivers there, and I went to a really good school called American River College. It was a junior college, and it was just I was just blessed with great teachers, and.
You're lucky.
Yeah, I was really lucky. Yeah. Because I know my stuff is weird. I know what I wanted to do was weird, but I got the skills and the encouragement to take this is going to sound new agey, but to take it as far as I could, you know, to, you know.
But it's also happening at a time where that is, where all those expectations are opening up, which you could be weird.
Yeah, it was a renaissance. It's basically saying you can be weird.
Yeah, 10 years earlier.
We're not even talking about how did I not go to Vietnam, you know. Because that.
Yeah, how did you not go to Vietnam?
You want
to
hear that, Ted?
Yeah, of course I
want. Really? I don't want to bore you.
No, no, tell me. Okay. I'm sure there's a story there.
Okay, in brief, I was number two in the lottery, which means you're going. Because there's a lottery back then.
Yeah, what year are we talking?
That was 1970. So I graduated from La Sierra High School in 1970. Uh-huh. I was number two in the lottery. Yeah. And that all that means is that you're definitely going if you pass your physical.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
So I did what everybody else does. You don't sleep for 3 days. You go in really raggedy. Yeah. A lot of people took a lot of drugs. By the way, I didn't take drugs. I didn't drink back
then. Why didn't you take drugs?
That's another story. So I went in and I really, really tried not to. But like everybody, I passed my physical.
Mm-hmm.
This is in Board 22 in Berkeley. And it was bombed 2 weeks after my physical.
Oh.
It was bombed. So that gives me the idea of the climate, the political climate back
Who
then.
Who bombed it?
I don't know.
No. It wasn't me.
Not that one. It wasn't me. It was like a weatherman kind of thing.
I don't know who bombed it. It was bombed by anti-war.
I had never heard who did it. Like, was it the SLA or
No one took responsibility for
maybe
it.
Maybe they did, but I don't remember. I don't know.
Yeah, you were just glad they're actually bombed it.
I didn't do it.
So all I did for the next 3 months is I asked my girlfriend Michelle. I didn't ask her. I said, "Boy, I wonder if I'm going to go to jail or Canada. Jail or Canada. Jail." Mm-hmm. And the whole time I was working on my conscientious objector application because I knew that I was opposed to war.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to recall that you couldn't be opposed to the Vietnam War. It couldn't be based, your objection couldn't be based on politics.
Yeah.
So I had to prove that I was opposed to all war, that I would never participate in any war. And even now I wonder, is that true? Would I have not wanted to go fight the Nazis or the Japs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I convinced myself, and I'm quite sure that idealistically, I am opposed to all war. I'm a pacifist. I'm a peacenik. And one day I got a call from my mom, whom I hadn't seen in a long time. And she said, "I have news for you." I said, "What?" She goes, "You got your conscience objector status in the mail."
Oh.
I said, "Wow, you're kidding. I got it without a person." It said that it said, "Congratulations, you're one of the only two people who ever got this without a personal appeal with a lawyer at Board 22. In Berkeley.
You must have done that application,
I
right?
really worked on it. So proving that I can write. It's the only other thing I ever wrote that was serious.
Yeah.
I forget where I was going with that.
Well, you got the application. You applied. You got your
And the reason why I'm sort of vague about my parents is my mom said, "By the way, you are not welcome in this house ever again."
Oh,
and I hadn't seen them for about 2 years already because I wasn't welcome in the house just because I decided I was going to be an artist. So far I've been really sort of sugarcoating how wonderful everybody was, and my parents were really against me being an artist and not going to Vietnam. So I was on my own since I was about 16.
Did it ever resolve itself?
About 5 years ago. Yeah.
Only 5 years ago?
Yeah, we didn't talk for a long time.
What? How did that happen?
Yeah. My dad was turning 75 and invited me to his birthday.
Mm.
And we went and we just buried the hatchet without any sense of what happened, what did you do, what was I doing, what was that all about?
It was just it was over.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. By the way, if I sound cool or mellow about it, it's a total revelation that could happen.
Yeah.
And it proves that. Because for years I was wondering, what would I say if we ever meet again, and you know, what would I do, and you know, and he had either the wisdom or he's in
obliviousness.
Obliviousness.
Ah, yeah.
To not deal with what happened. It's just like, it's over. We're back.
Was it mostly your dad's objections? Or was it your...
I think so, but my mom went along.
Well, your mom went along.
But it was formal. It wasn't like, oh, we're just here, like it didn't happen. He said, "We're back. Neil's back in the family. I want to announce that." He made this little poem. He'd read it and he turned 75 and welcomed myself and my wife back in the family.
Wow.
And yeah.
So they never even came to your wedding?
No, we're not that close. I mean, we're back in the family. But they're older. They're 80 now. But they don't travel that much or anything.
That's a lot of mental energy, I imagine, spent during a life thinking, what would I say
do you have something like that?
No, I don't. I'm just imagining.
Yeah, because when I tell people this, they're really that long? I said, yeah. I mean, just to be frank, I used to wonder, God, I wonder if I would be violent, you know, if I just say something really hateful.
Mm-hmm.
And actually practicing things like that, you know what you did to me when I was 16, you know, and that kind of thing.
And then all went poof.
Yeah. And it's just something, this sounds very myopic. I'm almost embarrassed to be saying all this because me, and you know.
Well, it's your interview. The world.
Yeah, it's my interview. Yeah, so you have to listen.
I'll interview some other people next week. So.
Yeah. And by the way, a lot of people might hear this interview and tell the story differently. Wait a second.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure I wasn't an easy kid. And I'm sure there are lots of reasons to disown me and try and run over me and stuff like that. But, to get beyond the meanness, boy, things really can change. Things really can improve. Things really can be forgiven.
Mm.
In a deep, not just the word I was trying to find was he in denial? Or did he have the wisdom to know that we'll never go back and figure out what happened?
Yeah.
And if you think about it, I don't even agree with myself all the time or remember exactly what I meant when I said so-and-so 3 minutes ago. But the point is that it's deeply, deeply over. And not only that, Ted, and if I was a teacher, like a spiritual teacher, which I always wanted to be.
Yeah.
not really. It's the last thing in the world I always wanted not to be. No, but
it's proof that some of the worst things that happen to you are the best, because that becomes who you are.
Yeah.
You know, grist for the mill and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But when they say the life is 10% what's given to you and 90% what you make of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then talking about alchemy, about, you know, turning base metal into gold. Well, I really wanted to be an artist. They really didn't want me to be an artist. So I really had, it wasn't given to me. I really had to go. I like to eat, so I started working in restaurants. There's a bumper sticker in New York that says, support the arts, tip your waiter, right? And this is what's going to, it's the only job in the world where there's just no guarantee whatsoever that no matter what you do, you're going to get anything from it.
Yeah.
And so, that's for me.
What's the last non-artist job you had?
It was restaurant work.
It was a restaurant work.
Yeah.
Where'd you work?
I'd rather not talk about it.
Was it here?
I'd really rather not talk
was about it. Was it here?
In this house?
No, in Santa Barbara.
But I still cook.
Yeah.
Kim will never leave me. I'm an insanely good cook.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you learned something from it.
Yeah. It was in Santa Barbara. But I worked a lot in L.A., San Francisco. I don't want to talk about it. Okay. Sorry.
Well, no. I don't need to know too much about it anyway. I'm just curious.
It's not very interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, when did you get into Zen?
There's a lucky story.
As an idea, as a conscious idea.
As a practice.
As a practice, yes.
I actually meditate. Now, by the way, I don't tell a lot of people this, so now it's coming. I'm old now, so I'm old enough that I can tell people.
Okay.
I'm 63. Yeah. But I have meditated my whole life, and the reason why I don't tell people is because I don't want to think it doesn't work.
yeah.
Serious. I mean, I illustrated for a Buddhist magazine quarterly called Tricycle for 20 years.
Yeah.
And a lot of what I was putting in there was about that sort of abstraction, about meditation, which is a practice of awareness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Compared to how I actually am and what I try and cultivate, which is this sense of inquisitiveness and riddle and what John Cage just said, this practice of nonsense. John Cage said, making art is nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
It's nonsensical. And that's why he loved it. You know? And I completely subscribe to that. I mean, everything has to make sense, but art is really about, like I said in the beginning, about going beyond. Well, Zen Buddhism is about cultivating not knowing mind.
Mm.
And for me, so I was lucky. Went to the Page Street Zen Center, where Suzuki Roshi had brought Zen practice to America in 1968. And I started meditating from then, doing Zazen. And I was also initiated and started practicing Tibetan Buddhism for 7 years later on here in Santa Barbara. We had a Dharma Dhatu, a practice center.
Where was that?
It was in two places. It was I don't know the name of the street, but right up the street from what was the Chart House, and it's now the Fish House. And there's a diving center there.
Yeah.
And there's a row of buildings right by the diving center. I think it's no longer a diving center.
But municipal wine winery.
Tasting. Yeah, wine tasting rooms.
Yeah.
So it was down that row from there. We also had one above the Bell Mattress Factory on Canna Perdido and Chapala, roughly.
Okay.
And so in 7 years, we had those two spots. And it was a Dharma Dhatu. It was part of Chogyam Trungpa's Vajra Dhatu organization. And we all paid dues and sat together.
Yeah.
And I mean, really sitting like 13-hour Dhatuns and retreats for 2 weeks at a Girl Scout camp in Santa Ynez. Now, as I say all this, people who know me say, "You meditate? Really? There's no one would ever guess that I meditate. You know, cause there's nothing."
Every morning, get up.
Yeah, every morning. Yeah, I have to do it before I do anything else. Otherwise, I'll find some reason not to do it. Evening sometimes on a rock in the creek over there sometimes.
Yeah,
you know? But it's But there's nothing. There's no wisdom about me. So you never. You think, well, God, after all these years, isn't it doing? Yeah. So I call myself a Buddhist, but I'm not a very good Buddhist. Gary Snyder said that. Who's coming here soon?
He is?
Campbell Hall.
Oh.
Yeah. I recommend everybody stop listening to me and go hear Gary Snyder.
Yeah.
On.
Because he's the good Buddhist.
Yeah, November 4th. Yeah, he's amazing. So he turned on Jack Kerouac and a lot of other people. Allen Ginsberg.
You met him?
I met him 3 times, just shaking hands and say, "Wow, you've been an inspiration." He's one of the big influences on my life. If you look at his work, and you look at mine, you could see. I'm definitely following trails, and he's one of them.
Why did you go to the Zen Center in the first place? Did you just walk past it, or are you reading?
I mentioned earlier that I had a really good teacher in high school named John Kaneko, and he was Japanese-American. I'm not sure if he was born in San Francisco or Japan. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling he was maybe born in Japan. Mm-hmm. But he is really straight, suit, black tie, white shirt, crew cut, and I was already into this deep, deep hippie revolution and explosion happening.
Yeah.
But he really took me under his wing, and for 2 years, I had one or two art classes a day, and I had an hour of independent study after school, 5 days a week, because I didn't have any place to go. And so I just stayed there. And I worked on a sculpture after school for 9 months. And I won first place in a high school competition of 13 schools. And I got another scholarship from that.
Hmm.
So you get a sense of how someone with no strong family encouragement, to say the least.
Yeah, yeah.
Got incredible encouragement from my teachers. Anyway, he basically started, without me knowing that, almost like this Native American guy I was mentioning, mm-hmm. he started influencing me. And he's very strict. He wasn't personable. But he was just pointing me all the time. Mm. And I was really drawn. I think I just started being influenced. I blame it on him, but I don't know. Like, I was drawn towards things Japanese. And
is an authority figure, too, that you need?
Maybe a father figure kind of thing.
Yeah.
According to my parents, he tried to adopt me, but he never told me that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this sounds funny, huh?
It does sound funny.
I know, yeah. But apparently, according to my parents, he tried to adopt me. He thought I should be sleeping in a house instead of in the fields and all that kind of stuff.
No, man.
Yeah. But
nature.
And of all the people I never went back and thanked, I wish I could go back and thank him.
Huh.
And I should see if he's still around.
So when did you first, what age were you when you went to the center?
16.
Young.
Yeah, I heard about it. And I was really.
And since then, boom.
Yeah, I just knew right away this is...
Every day?
This is,
would you say you've meditated?
Well, actually, I tried a lot of different things around
then.
Yeah. I started learning yoga and different stuff. And so obviously, I was on a path right at that time. It was kind of strange.
Yeah.
Because not so many people are doing yoga and meditating.
Now they do yoga with their phones and their Starbucks.
I know. They're privileged. I wish we could have had that. I wasn't allowed to drink coffee. None of my friends would have allowed me to drink coffee.
They wouldn't allow you to drink coffee?
Yeah, yeah.
What did you drink?
I had nothing. I
no caffeine, no green tea?
No drugs, no nothing. I was a weird kid that I knew I had.
How did you survive the 60s?
Well, I did take acid a few times.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that really helped. That, so I was at,
that
don't
helped.
Worry, don't worry, Ted. I was all right.
Oh, yeah. Now, okay, you can be.
Listen, we'll children, don't do back. That. Not as a party drug, children.
Back in.
Yeah, part of my spiritual quest, with quotation marks.
Yeah.
I found LSD to be extremely inspiring and influential. And, but I was under a guided series with an older guy.
Yeah, the proper way.
Yes, yes. This is not driving a car or partying or nothing like that. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So what did you get from that?
From LSD?
Yeah.
Same thing as everybody.
Yeah.
Everything. It's like, wow, this universe. Well, okay, so my art is trying to mirror a tiny, tiny bit of that. That this universe, I mean, the idea of not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
That huge wow. And there's a lot more going on than we can see or feel or comprehend or experience. Mm-hmm. But when you're in that state of mind, or in that, under the influence, you
come out. Yeah,
yeah. You get just a big wow. It takes the top of your head off.
Completely different perspective. Yeah.
For me, it, and from just about anybody I've ever talked to or known, it had a spiritual quotient, and even spiritual is kind of a limiting word. I mean, but it's just sort of an infinite opening. Not a trajectory, but just. Infinite in every direction, just kind of aha.
Yeah.
That aha-ness.
I think what happened with a lot of people, though, is that they use that as the crutch. instead of the learning experience, they went, that took me out of my depressing life. Then I'll just do this every day.
Yeah, that was the big problem with drugs generally, I think.
Yeah. And by the way, it still is.
Yeah. I wasn't heroic about not smoking pot. I'm allergic to it. So even though I was in bands and all that.
You're allergic to it.
So that's why I wasn't smoking pot. Yeah. Nice. I get sick. I know. It's really sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't have any great excuse for not smoking pot, but I was around it all the time.
Yeah.
So.
And you still like listening to the Grateful Dead. Ba-dum.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think, well, ask me another question. I'm getting lost in that.
Oh. Well, we were talking about Zen and.
Oh, yeah. So.
Yeah. And so, because I do see like the koans and those ideas come back to your art. And this is what we were saying this at the beginning of the show. So.
Yes. Yeah, so this says, and thus I saved the Mahunga Valley. What does that mean?
Yeah.
So if I put something that makes sense and is really clever, it won't ride on a painting because it won't. So for me, words are part of the painting, part mm-hmm. of the abstraction, part of taking you somewhere where you've never been before. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm trying for. And the Zen is just right. That's what it's about, you know. Mm. But it's a discipline. It's not like just let it all hang out and be free and loose and you actually sit without moving. Mm-hmm. It said it's the only time you're not creating more karma is when you're sitting, meditating. Because even when you're asleep, you're dreaming and you're not sort of in control. And for me, it's a very liberating thing. So like you said, fortunately, I'm one of the people who realize, well, you can't just take acid every day.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? So for me, believe it or not, even though Zen is in many, many, many ways the opposite of taking acid,
mm-hmm.
it cultivates a similar openness of mind, I think.
Mm-hmm. How do you, in terms of creativity and when you sit and do your work, do you have a separate pad for like writing down these ideas, the text-based ideas?
Yeah, see all these papers here under my phone there?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Under the phone.
So that's where they all go.
Not all, but they're in my pocket. They're there in my backpack. I have a book bag that when I walk around with Emerson, the dog, I mm-hmm. go downtown with this book bag, and they're just on air all over the place.
Mm.
It's part of my... I decided if I really, really focused and really stayed with this, mm. I could, like we were, I'll give an example. We were watching the documentary on Jimi Hendrix. Was that about 5 years old, the one we were talking about?
It was earlier? A couple of years old.
Yeah. And everybody in the movie, former girlfriends, his father, his sister, every musician he knew, said they never, ever saw him without his guitar. Even at walking to a movie, he had his guitar with him, you know. Yeah, he became Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
And I realized a few years ago, I mean, 45 years ago, that if I always took my pen with me and wrote down my thoughts or did little doodles, I could be the best third-rate painter in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Nah, something to attain.
Well, that's what I'm trying for.
Okay, good. Does it come easily when you sit down to a blank canvas? How'd you get into it? Is it easier because of Zen meditation?
No, I think the art came first in this case,
mm-hmm.
and the Zen just makes it even. The Zen inspires me to do something true and honest and yet funny and like John Cage said, absurd. Just because that to me is the most motivating, inspiring stuff. But now here we go back into splitting it up. The graphics just come naturally to me, even mm-hmm. though I keep saying I don't have any talent. I have a talent for making a hopefully a happy mess.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's my talent, okay? Because I can't draw a circle or a square or something like that. You know, I can't make a figure turn. I couldn't animate, for instance.
Oh, really?
I can draw a figure this way, and I can turn them sideways, but I couldn't do the in-between very well.
Oh, really?
I could show it to you. but hopefully my messes are happy looking, and I think they are, actually. And it's borne out by the fact that people like them and they buy them, which is a miracle every time. I never get over that. But when I'm writing... I tell people that most of my work, the text, even though it's just a few lines, took more time to execute than the actual visual. It's always the case. I spend a real lot of time on the words. I'm always churning, chewing on them and working on them. The drawings come pretty naturally.
Text is troublesome because it will now point in a certain direction.
Yeah.
If you're not careful.
Exactly, and I have to be careful about that. Yeah. Because it's going for someone. Someone's going to interpret it and say, I know what this means. And so you have to anticipate all that. It's like with the visuals. If someone says, is that blob over there an elephant? And even though I didn't intend it to be, if someone else sees it as one, as mm-hmm. an artist, you have to have seen that and say,
And if you left it there, it's an intentional, you know?
Yeah.
And
that's, or the that's thing tricky. That was a bear, but was a what? What was
the
name?
Yeah, yeah, I forget already.
What was the thing it was called? The weird
want me to go
creature?
Look real fast?
No.
It's a South American.
South American.
Yeah, someone's buying a painting, and I have a California brown bear on it.
Yep.
And she said, is that a... I can't remember that, but it's she goes to South America a lot. The name
thing.
Of it is South American wild pig.
Mm.
And I said, no. I said, but, and I don't usually do this because it's so obvious if you're trying to sell something, but I said, but it could be for you if you just buy this.
Yeah.
And I was joking because I thought she wouldn't. She said, well, let's call it that and I will. but yeah, you have to, so to answer your question, when I'm writing, there's a real lot of sifting and, you know, layering. And I'm painting with words. Basically, they're part of the painting. So I am painting with words. They're part of the color, part of the scribble. I mean, sometimes I put words on a painting just because I like how it looks having words on it.
Mm.
But if they make too much sense or if they're too funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can't leave this interview without mentioning your music.
Ah.
And the band. What's the band's name again?
The band is Zen Horse Repair.
Zen Horse Repair. Yeah. I was going to say something else.
Yeah.
Another Zen in the title. Yeah. Zen Horse Repair. Tom Lackner's in the band.
Tom Lackner is my partner now.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And so how far back does that go? When did you start
about
recording?
About 10 years ago, I did my second album with, recorded by the incredible Robinson Eikenberry.
Ah.
And he's produced a lot of albums in Santa Barbara. And so my first one was just me sitting in a chair like this playing directly unedited into the mic.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out really good. My friends think it's my best one. But the next one, I had a bunch of new songs. I said, I want to do something different. And he said, do you mind if I put a band together for you? And he pulled in Tom Lackner, Bruce Winter, and Malcolm Anderson. And Tom has played with everybody. Mm-hmm. He's a percussionist, drummer, composer. But he's been, he and Joe Woodard have, and Dick Dunlap have run top...
Headless Household
for 30 years now.
Yeah.
And great local band with a bunch of geniuses. And but Tom is just, he's toured with everybody. He's a consummate musician. But he and I just fell in love and became best friends. He was my best man at my wedding. And so we decided to name the band after that first album, Zen Horse Repair, together. The band is now called Zen Horse Repair. And we have a second album. We're working on a third one right now. And we play occasionally around town. We play at Soho once in a while or a little... odds and ends. By the way, if anybody wants us, the music is really, really bad. It's there's nothing like it.
bad. Do you feel like it's a musical version of your paintings?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that
Tom,
what you're
and
going
Tom,
for?
You know, and even speaking for Tom, although bringing Tom into it, it has even more and less because Tom is a great editor. He's a great producer, and we get to record in his studio, so we get to really, it's almost a curse because...
In the Tom Pound.
Yeah, in the Tom, how do you know that?
Because I interviewed Joe Wood.
Oh, neat, yeah. So in the Tom Pound, which is one of the magical places in the world, it's almost, I say it's almost a curse because we don't have to end in an hour because we're out of money or out of time, let's do some more, and so it makes it so some magic stuff happens, but we don't have that T.S. Eliot thing about, we have to end it now.
You don't have to abandon it.
Yeah, but it's a the music's definitely an extension of this, and it's my voice, it's my lyrics, it's my narrative voice, and then Tom makes it magic. He makes it fly.
Mm.
He makes my voice sing.
But you don't sing.
No, I don't sing. I kind of sing like this.
You kind of tell stories.
I don't have a musical voice. Like I can't draw. I can't draw with my voice. But Tom makes it fly, and he's just a wonderful person. Most of the time.
Well, most of the time. Thanks, Tom.
99% of the time.
How'd you get all that gallery representation? Like,
that's I have young people ask me that. And by the way, the one thing I didn't say about Song of the Beach is that it only works at my age for me. Because when I was young, I really had this ambition. Because I make it all sound like I'm just free and enlightened about doing the art. Mm-hmm. I really had ambition to only try and get in better and better and better galleries.
Mm-hmm.
And now... I don't need that anymore. I just love meeting people and selling my art to them, and it's not about the ego recognition so much and all that. And the galleries are in a sense are bigger bucks, but they get 50%. Mm-hmm. They're usually quite recalcitrant in terms of paying in any kind of timely fashion whatsoever. It's like it almost doesn't exist. So to answer your question, over the years, the thing I love doing the most is what helped me. And that's just little black and white cartoons. I'll call them cartoons, even though they're in my style and they're pretty abstract.
and they were in occasional literary arts magazines. There's one put out in San Francisco and here by a guy named Joe. I forget his last name right now. It was called Art Life. I was in that. So my first big gallery was the Barry Gordon Gallery in Santa Monica. And he actually saw one, and he called me up here, and he said, "Hey, do you ever come to L.A.?" And I said, "I'm coming tomorrow," which I wasn't. Yeah. And he wrecked me for 13 years until the Northridge quake happened. And that just led into other people seeing my work. And I was lived in Germany for 2 years. I was in good galleries there. San Francisco, someone else got me in the Lim Gallery. Someone who saw my work and said, "Man, I know a gallery who'd be interested." No, it was actually Dan, the owner, who saw that. He got me in the SF MoMA Artist Gallery.
Yeah.
And so just a little... Here's the weird thing, Ted. I'm sure you've heard this before. Yeah. You can't knock on doors. It doesn't work. They don't want to see you.
Yeah.
You cannot take a portfolio under your arm and knock on a gallery door. We've all seen Basquiat's walk up to Warhol. Well, that's the reason why we know that story, is because it's impossible.
Yeah.
You know, we know the times it has happened, but for most people, that isn't going
to
happen.
He still had the sense to charge him.
Yeah, $10, $15, right?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
But even if it was $100, it's Basquiat.
Yeah.
The difference between Basquiat and me, by the way, is that Basquiat was a genius. Basquiat did all that work in 9 years.
Yeah.
And it's just extraordinary.
Yeah, yeah.
We go back to the same Cy Twombly, I point out, in terms of... Yeah. But anyway, I don't know... I was just lucky in terms of getting the gallery thing happening. There's no procedure that can get you there necessarily. I mean, you'd have to be more ambitious or more fearless than I am to somehow do what you have to do to get in.
Yeah, it sounds like it just evolved, and suddenly you're
it there. Evolved. Yeah, that's the word. Yeah.
I didn't ask how you got to Santa Barbara.
How do you know that?
Well, I don't. I didn't.
Yeah.
Because in your story, we were like talking. You're in Sacramento.
Yeah.
So when's the leap to Santa Barbara?
You remember a restaurant called the Tea House? You can't.
Tea House? No.
Tea House, yeah.
No, the Tea off.
I was passing through Santa Barbara one day. I had taken my then girlfriend to LAX. She was flying to Japan to study art.
Mm.
And I was going back to San Francisco. And this is a simplification of the story, but for all intents and purposes, I met a friend named Blake Brown who took me to... He said, "I got to take you to this place called the Tea House before you go to San Francisco."
Mm-hmm.
And we were sitting there, and I'd taken my Martin guitar in with me because I didn't want to leave it in the car. And there's a waitress there named Story Thornton who said, "You play guitar?" I said, "Well, I'm a songwriter, and I kind of play it." And she goes, "Well, what are you doing tonight?" They'd had a musician cancel that Sunday night. They couldn't play, or Saturday, whatever night it was. It wasn't a Sunday. And so I said, "Oh, I'll get it." So she went and got the owners, Harvey and Donna, and they gave me a gig that night, or one night that week, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up playing there for 6 years every Sunday night.
Huh?
And I ended up cooking there, and I ended up being the gardener there. And they had a place where, overlooking the harbor, an apartment that needed someone to sit in it for the first 3 months. So instead of taking my last $3 in my Volkswagen Bug, I mean $6 in my Volkswagen Bug to San Francisco, I thought I'd spend 3 months in Santa Barbara.
And then it turned into...
Yeah, I just felt... unlike most people, I didn't fall in love with it right away. It was very gradual. I mean, I liked it. It was very nice and all that. But I was comparing it to San Francisco where things were just more.
Yeah.
And I now recognize that it was a great thing. You know? Santa Barbara really... I'm one of those people who just made it easy for it to, you know, you can be here. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's the beach. Here's Rattlesnake Trail. Here's this nice... It was a great gourmet. It was written up in Gourmet Magazine a bunch of times. A vegetarian, famous, world famous vegetarian restaurant, the Tea House. It's on Canna Perdido and Garden Street.
Emerson's annoyed at something. Canna Perdido and Garden Street. Yeah. I'm trying to think what's
there. There's a little wooden building there.
Is that the architect? No. Hold on.
There's...
Oh,
I don't know what's there now. What business?
No, not it's not Panini. Anyway,
no. That's a block down from Panini, like, on the other side, the opposite corner, catty corner.
I know what you're talking about. There's no restaurant there now.
No. But it's a neat old building. If you look at old wooden building and really old, it was a great restaurant.
Emerson.
But it became the point of all this is that
he's
that place that everybody went there. It was it was just a real. I met there are people that we still know each other who we all met there. Mm. Who worked there, clientele, customers.
And now you live here. It's this beautiful house.
Yeah, Mission Canyon. It's a great place to live.
Yeah. What's your spirit animal?
I should say coyote, right? I'll say coyote, yeah.
You think?
Yeah.
Definitely?
Yeah, but I don't take that... I mean, I don't take it too seriously, because if you really think of what I spend most of my time listening to and talking to, it's crows. And I'm surrounded by crows all day long.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
And they really get me.
That's where the question came from. These crows are they're legion.
I know. But I make these little sculptures we haven't talked about. And
showed me on the tour.
Yeah, I claim that they're coyotes.
Here we go. Back on the mic.
Yeah, I claim that these are coyotes, but I just say they are. I mean, they could be birds, right? It's kind of like a joke. I kind of blame everything on this coyote figure, which is a good thing to blame it on, because coyotes are tricksters, and the coyote's the lowest in the totem of all spirit animals in the Native American. Do you know that?
No.
Yes, it's not in a funny way. It's like he's just a loser. He's a total loser. So we know him as a trickster, and
a super genius.
Or a super that's the point. Coyote. If you're that bad,
yeah,
and you do everything wrong, guess what? You discover new territory. He becomes the holy fool. And but these things, these sculptures, I got one. See, look, ladies and gentlemen, it's standing in my hand. Look, it looks very bird-like. It doesn't look like a coyote, right?
Yeah.
Because did you hear that?
That was your moment of zen, right there.
Coyote trick.
Thank you, Emerson, with your tail.
Emerson just rang the meditation bell with his tail.
So what's the rest of your day like? What's the rest of your year going to be like?
It's almost 10 to 1, so that's after lunch, I'm an inveterate napper.
Yeah.
What does inveterate mean?
It means you do it a lot. I
take my 20-minute nap. Yeah. And then I'll work all afternoon, and then Emerson and I will go for his third walk. We live right by Rocky Nook Park, ladies and gentlemen, and... Yeah. The Mission Creek goes right behind Natural History Museum. Yeah. So he has two. He gets to say, let's go this way or let's go that way.
Nice.
There's still a little swimming hole in Rocky Nook Park where you can swim in little circles. A little teeny. Like,
really?
There's by 10 by 20 feet of water. It's deep enough for him to swim in a little circle. He's a yellow lab.
Oh.
So that's really nice.
All right.
Well, and then Kim will never leave me. I'm an insanely good cook. And tonight I'm grilling salmon.
Yeah.
And I'll do like a...
It's Friday night. It's fish. Friday night's fish.
I meant to tell you, I became Catholic.
I'm a Zen Catholic.
Okay.
Well, the new Pope is really, it's kind of inspiring me.
Yeah?
Yeah, compared to the old Pope, anyway.
Yeah, cool. He's cool Pope.
Pretty cool Pope, huh?
Yeah. He's about 75% cool.
Pretty 75, yeah.
He's got, that's pretty good, though.
Yeah, for a Pope.
That's for a Pope.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, do your history. Look at the old Popes.
Yeah, really.
They were 0% cool.
One of the Popes was a former pirate.
I didn't know that. Yeah, which one?
That's a factoid. I was back around the time of the Medici family.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, yeah. He's a former pirate.
Well, they're going through popes really quickly at that right? Yeah, around really time. Quickly. So,
oops.
They probably said, have we tried a pirate yet? They're like, no, well.
Did someone shoot him? No, he shot himself.
All right. And then Sunday, you'll be...
Sunday, I'll be at the beach, 10 o'clock.
Okay.
And, I'm in the craft section because they're doing a construction thing down on the art section.
Yeah.
And so for about the next year, I'll be down in the craft section. By the way, I'm just about convinced, Ted, that what I'm doing is actually a craft.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you get that? It's so repetitious what I do. And because people are saying, well, what are you doing in the craft section? And I look at the craftspeople around me, I don't see any difference. I mean, this person's making insanely beautiful ashtrays, and this person's making beautiful earrings, and I'm in between them. And... I don't have highfalutin. I mean, it's kind of, it sounds weird, but it's sort of a release. I mean, I don't have high, it lowers my expectations.
Yeah.
Of, oh, this has, because it's back to your gallery question, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not in a gallery, so I'm not even trying anymore.
Yeah.
And it's a craft. I repeat it like crazy, like I always did,
mm-hmm.
but even faster because I'm selling them for low prices.
Yeah. You're lowfalutin.
Lowfalutin. Wow.
Yeah. Lowfalutin art.
Well, can I
write that down?
I'm going to write that down. It's going to be my writing pile. Lowfalutin.
Okay. And you have a website?
No, because of the gallery in Paris, I blame it on them.
How can we find you?
You can find me on, get out your pens.
Okay.
Neil, N-E-A-L, at Neil, N-E-A-L, Crosby, CROSBIE.com.
Oh, that is a website.
That's a website. Oh, it's not a, no, it's a, it's, no, it's my email.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. But so if you have NeilCrosby.com.
Yeah.
Then there must be some site attached.
Yeah, there's no.
There isn't.
But you can friend me on what is it?
Facebook.
Facebook. Okay. I'm computer literate if I sound a little bit fuzzy here. Kim does everything for me.
The Book of Face?
Yeah. What is that thing? Oh, she doesn't do everything for me.
Write something
in there. But you know what I got to do with the internet?
What?
Oh, never mind.
Hey.
I can't go there. I mean, I can get there, but I mean, only barely. who's going to hear this, Ted?
Well, people who are interested in art, people have heard you, people are trying to track you down.
They're not only in the Funk Zone, right?
No.
Yeah.
No, no, this is international.
International. Wow. Yeah. Wow.
International.
Well, people really should come here and go to the beach, right? Especially on Sundays.
Just to say, if you're going to come to Santa Barbara and it's a Sunday and the beach, you know where to find
them. Do you have any idea how many people you're reaching?
At the moment, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. Hundreds.
That's what I'm always trying for.
Hundreds. I want to get to the thousands and then beyond.
Yeah.
I say that because I think if someone's listening to this in the future when I have way more listeners, they'll be like, oh, it's from humble beginnings.
Yeah, come back. Oh, you're saying I'm humble? Yeah. I'm a humble beginning. Wait, what was that? Lower expectations? What was that?
Lowfalutin.
Lowfalutin. But no, the reason why I'm asking is you're a really good interviewer.
Oh, thank you.
I've been with really bad ones and you're better than them.
Yes.
Cool. A lot better.
There you go. Well, I'm not comparing myself to other interviewers, as you were just saying.
But you're easy. I don't feel like I'm at the dentist, and you're pleasant. But you also know your stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good. And my stuff.
And your stuff. All right. Well, Neil, we're going to leave it there.
Oh, no.
For today. Yeah.
That's it.
I'm sure we'll continue chatting after.
I'll try and evolve this before next time.
Okay. Well, all right, thanks. Thanks a lot, Neil.
Thank you, Ted.
Cheers.
Cheers.
There you have it, folks. It's the Neil Crosby interview on the Funk Zone podcast. That was fun. We had a good time. We talked ink and drawing in ink, and we had some revelations talking about that business. I went and got some new nibs for my pens after we first talked, and decided to get back into working in ink. I like it. It's hard, though. Well, no one says it's going to be easy. All right. You can find Neil Crosby at Facebook, facebook.com/Neil, N-E-A-L dot Crosby, C-R-O-S-B-I-E. Yes, not related to the Bings of the world. You can find me, tedmills.com. That's where I reside. Also, funkzonepodcast.com on Twitter. At Ted Mills. Also subscribe on iTunes or on Stitcher, and also stop by that patreon.com page, patreon.com/funkzonepodcast. You know, $1, please, look into your heart, $1. Okay, enough of my begging and pleading. I hope you enjoyed the show. That was fun. We'll be back next week for another talk with an artist or creative person. Who will it be? Oh, and coming up, you know, it's the film festival. We're going to have some film festival-based interviews coming up. Can't say anything at the moment, but they are coming up. Santa Barbara International Film Festival rolling into town with directors and screenwriters, and who knows who will be on the show. So if you're hearing this, maybe you want to be on the show. If you're coming up for the film festival, just contact me at the page. Okay, that's it. I am going to let you go and get on to whatever you were doing before you sat down and listened to this. Or maybe you're doing it while listening to this. That's equally cool. Let us know in the comments. Okay, I'll leave the last word to my second grade friend, Joe. Take it away, Joe. See ya!
And now for a big goodbye. See you soon. We'll make some more tapes later on. Bye. We might make some more tapes later on. Bye. We might make more tapes later on. Yeah. See you soon. Bye.